So welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
I'm Max.
I'm Jules.
And we're here to talk about How to Lie with Statistics, our favorite book ever.
Sure. Okay, so we read from chapter 1 to chapter 3, I believe.
Yeah. Up to chapter 4.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting. Though at some points it seemed a little bit hard to follow. The author kind of kept doubling back onto, like, different stories that he was talking about.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, after he would change the subject to something else.
I felt like he did that a lot in chapter one.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the beginning he started talking about the average mean of...
The Yale men's
income.
Yeah.
So when he was talking about that, he all of a sudden just moved on to, like, the average income in a neighborhood, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, they change it up during, like, at first they could say it's, like, I think he said, like, 20,000 or 30,000
mm-hmm.
a year. And then he switched it up to, like, 3,000 a year. And he started talking about how average can mean three different things. It can mean mean, median, and mode. And I heard that before, but I see it's interesting to see people use it in the real world. And it's like,
yeah,
you're kind of lying, but you're kind of not lying.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. Like, you know, I feel like we like see like statistics all the time, like in the news or like, you know, wherever. And it's like, this is the average of, you know, this group of people, but they never actually say which average it is.
Right. So basically it was just like, you have to kind of like guesstimate which one is he's talking about.
Yeah, right.
And then he went on to like the test of heads and tails. No, that's chapter 3, my bad.
Yeah, chapter 2 I think was the neighborhood.
Oh, was it?
Yes. Yeah, that's the average income is 15,000, but then the average income is 3,500.
Yeah, and then he started talking about the median.
Yeah.
And how, like, there's, like, a bunch of people that's above this median and a bunch
mm-hmm.
of people below it. And it's kind of, like, it could be a good thing when it comes to, like, employees, but it's also can be confusing because, like, he started talking about, like, some different examples with, like, oh, like, this person is getting this small percent, but this one person is getting all of this money, but it makes sense. Like,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting when he was talking about how the bias is, like, built into the sample space. Like, he was giving the example of, like, you know, someone's assigned to a street corner to, like, do surveys.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, two people are walking down the street. One is, like, clean cut and, like, you know, just regular looking. And one is, like drunk and, like, stumbling down the street yelling.
Right.
Like, he would obviously ask the cleaner cut person.
Right.
Like, but I guess, you know, that kind of skews the data. Like, he asked someone that's, you know, I mean, I don't know what the study would be, but.
Well, they actually did a study. The one where, like, they had a group of African-American talkers and Caucasian talkers
mm-hmm.
asking black people questions. And, like it was funny how to see they answered in a different way. I don't know. I don't remember if they said they got these group of African-American people from the same area or
mm-hmm.
different area. But I thought it was interesting to see how they answered in a different way. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to find a quote.
Yeah, I'm looking for one right now. Okay. So, would it be any wonder if, when answering the question with connotations of disloyalty in wartime, a Southern black would tell a white man what sounded good rather than what he actually believed? Is it also possible that the different groups of interviewers chose different kinds of people to talk to? I guess, you know, that also skews some of the data. Like, like, that makes sense. Like, that someone would say an answer that they think is the right answer instead
mm-hmm.
of what they actually believe
right.
because, you know, I guess during World War II, like, you know, it wasn't really very even ground.
Yeah.
This book is actually pretty old. Like, it was written in 1954, which kind of, you know, sheds light on, like, the neighborhood incomes. Because, like, you know, they're talking about how much money $25,000 is.
Right.
And, like, now, like, with inflation and all that, like,
25 is not really that much.
That's not really that much. Like, yeah. They're talking about 25,000 being, like, you know, a business executive's right. salary. Like,
So I would like to talk about chapter 3, I think.
Chapter 3.
Because okay. I was a little, I think that was the part I was more confused on than any other part.
Okay.
Because they started talking about the toothpaste company.
Right. Yeah.
And, oh, okay. So they were talking about, like, how many, I think it's the percentage of usage or how well it works, I think. I think it's how well it works. And then they started talking about how falsehood was going on, like, how they're lying, but it's not really a lie the way they work. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but I was kind of, like, confused on, like, what are you talking about? And then they just went to, oh, heads and tails for pennies. Just like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think that one was, like, about the site. Like, it seemed like he was trying to talk a lot about, like, the size of the sample space, like, because the penny example, there's only 10 pennies that he's tossing.
Right.
And heads comes up 8 times.
Yeah.
So his thing, it says, you know, in the little picture, it's like, science proves that tossed pennies come up heads 80% of the time.
That's true. Or is it?
Or is it, right? Yeah. Yeah, right. So, like, I guess you have to, they're just trying to say, like, sometimes statistics are, like, measured wrongly.
That's, you know? Yeah. It kind of got me thinking, maybe, well, now that was explained, maybe it was, like, they were using a penny as an example for the toothpaste, because, like, they could have just tested a small group of people with the toothpaste, and, like, maybe 10 people, so maybe 8 of those people said, oh, this toothpaste really works, and then 2 of those people said, oh, no, it doesn't work, so maybe that could have been, like, maybe that's his example.
Yeah.
And it does make sense, because then they can say, oh, 80% of the people, this toothpaste works 80%.
Cool. Yeah, another example that uses the the polio vaccination one, where 450 children in a community were vaccinated and 680 were left unvaccinated as controls. Shortly after the community was visited by an epidemic, not one of the vaccinated children contracted a recognizable case of polio, but neither did any of the controls. What the experimenters had overlooked or not understood in setting up their project was the low incidence of paralytic polio. At the usual rate, only 2 cases would have been expected in a group this size. So this is that, you know, the people that planned this experiment sort of planned it badly, so there would be really no meaning anyway, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and then they went on on the next page, they went to talk about the housing. So it says, together, too much of recent American housing, for instance, has a plan to fit the statistically average family of 3.6 persons. Translated into reality, this means 3 or 4 persons, which in turn means 2 bedrooms. And this size family average, though it is, actually makes a minority of all family. We build average houses for average families, said the builders, and neglect the majority that are larger or smaller. Found that interesting because right now I'm, like, looking for an apartment, and, like, there's mostly 2-bedroom apartments, and, like, you can rarely find a 3-bedroom or a 4-bedroom or a 1-bedroom apartment. And I find that kind of interesting because that's basically what they are doing. They're just building 2-bedroom houses because that's the average amount of family, 3.6. So all you need is 2 bedrooms. So
Right.
Kind of see that in real life right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a cool perspective. I guess. Oh, it looks like we're almost out of time for this.
Yes, we are.
This segment of How to Lie with Statistics
by Darnell Huff.
By Darnell Huff with Jules and Max. Thank you for tuning in.
See you next week, I think.
See you next week. Next week.
Bye.
Bye.